Time now for the rest is history, and yesterday, the 14th of October, marked the anniversary of the first publication of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Arthur Conan Doyle. It was published in 1892, and the book is a collection of 12 short stories and the earliest stories featuring Detective Sherlock Holmes. Conan Doyle would go on to write four novels and dozens more short stories about the detective and his partner, Dr. Watson. And apparently the author had a love-hate relationship with Sherlock and felt that Holmes was, figuratively speaking, a burden who was holding him back. Well, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle actually visited Christchurch. He arrived in December in 1920 to give a series of lectures at the Theatre Royal, mainly focusing on spiritualism. To tell us more, Wendy Riley from the website Lost Christchurch joins us. Good evening, Wendy.
Good evening.
You wrote this post when you were working at the Court Theatre and you were putting on a production of The Hounds of the Baskervilles, which was adapted from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's novel of the same name. But how did you come across the tidbit that he'd actually visited Christchurch back in 1920?
Well, I'm a bit of a history geek and I spend a lot of time reading papers past. So when I was doing some writing for the Court on the background to the show, I came across this wee tidbit about Conan Doyle having visited Christchurch, like many of the other literary giants of the day, George Bernard Shaw, Mark Twain. They all tended to do these big tours, and one of the places they came to was a little old Christchurch.
It's such a great story, his visitation to Christchurch, where he stayed and all the rest of it. We'll come back to that. But let's start with his work as an author. And as you wrote, Conan Doyle eventually grew to dislike Sherlock Holmes and he killed him off in December 1893 in The Final Problem. Why didn't he like him?
I think he kind of fell out of love with him. He was a means to an end. He made Conan Doyle a very rich man. I think Conan Doyle said himself that it was an excellent way for a struggling young man to get a foothold and earn some money. And when he'd done what he set out to do, he decided he'd move on to other more exciting things or more serious writing. And that for him was through the medium of spiritualization. That was his thing. That was his topic. So he turned to that and got rid of Sherlock Holmes when he'd done what he needed him to do for him.
What other things did he do in his life besides writing?
Well, he came from a very interesting family, slightly dysfunctional. His father was a brilliant creative type who actually turned to drink and I believe was institutionalised and very much distanced from the family. So his mother became the very important figure in his life and in his decision making, and she came from a military background. So you end up with a man who's really very talented, a talented writer as we know, but also a great interest in the military. I think he was employed by the likes of the UK Winston to go and research what was going on during the Boer War and the First World War, and he was responsible for some big changes, things that saved people's lives during the war, like lifeboats and life jackets and metal hats. So he had many interests, and he was a bit of a philanthropist as well. He worked for the good of other people. So he had many strings to his bow, very interesting man.
And Sherlock Holmes, the character, was based on some of these problem-solving attributes that he had.
I think they were. He was a little bit of a detective himself, so he spent some time actually putting his brilliant deductive powers to work to prove the innocence of some people who he believed hadn't been served well through justice. And there was a solicitor who had been sentenced to 7 years of penal servitude in 1903, I think it was, for maiming cattle and horses. He was kind of a countryside Jack the Ripper, if you will. And he did the same for another man called Adolf Beck in 1904. This man had been found guilty in 1896 for defrauding a woman. So he used his detective powers to get these two off, find them innocent. And these two cases were responsible for the establishment of the Court of Criminal Appeal.
Gee, and he was not a lawyer, though.
He just assisted
in that.
Man.
Wow, okay, so he became very, very famous with Sherlock Holmes, with his character Sherlock Holmes, but then decided that he didn't want to carry on down that literary track. And so he killed him off, as we mentioned. And then you said he got involved in spiritualism, or that was his great life's purpose from there on. Yes. And then that brought him to Christchurch. What was it, a tour and a talk on spiritualism?
Yes. So he'd been a Catholic, grown up a Catholic, and I think, I don't know what happened in his life, but basically he abandoned Catholicism and adopted this newfangled fad of the time, this spiritualism, and that's what brought him to Christchurch. He came to Australia and New Zealand to lecture, so he would pack out theatres, including the Theatre Royal in Christchurch, which is now the restored Isaac Theatre Royal, and people would hear him talk about death and the hereafter and the new revelation. So he'd cover all aspects of spiritualism, and he had two lectures. In a second lecture, he introduced and explained and talked about some fairy photos that he had that he called pictures of psychic phenomena. And these things were advertised as a series of modern miracles and final and positive proof that psychic spiritualism, these theories, existed, basically.
And that ultimately proved to be incorrect, didn't it? Many, many decades later.
Total hoax.
Which is a shame for his reputation, really, because, but it was after he died, I believe, that was revealed that that was a hoax.
Absolutely, yes. And you're right about his reputation. In fact, in a town like Christchurch, which has the pillars of, the press and the Anglican church, they were very anti Conan Doyle, and they wrote a lot of things against him in the paper, and he had spent a lot of time sort of fighting through letters to the editor what was being said about him. But yes, these photos were hoaxes by a couple of young girls, two cousins. They faked photos of themselves with fairies, but they were basically like they'd use hat pins and cutouts of drawings of fairies. But Conan Doyle was completely taken in by them. He made these girls and their photos famous. He said that it proved ectoplasmic thought forms that was coming from the girl's aura, and he travelled extensively, displayed and talked about these images, wrote a book about them. And the girls, of course, didn't to disappoint Conan Doyle and didn't want to be found out. So it wasn't until about 1982, I think it is, which was 50 years after his death, that they confessed. And I think one of the girls still maintained that she was telepathic and that she actually had seen the fairies. But by that stage, the photos were famous, and they ended up being sold for about £21,000, I think, at the time in the 1980s.
Well, given his interest in spirituality, maybe he saw all that happening. You mentioned also that when he was in Christchurch, he stayed at the home of Sir Joseph and Lady Kinsey. Who were they?
They were an English couple. He'd made his money as a bit of an entrepreneur. I think he had a shipping company. And he was great friends of the explorer Scott. In fact, I believe Scott wrote some of his last letters to Sir Joseph before he perished. So they were basically Christchurch celebrities. They were the elite of Christchurch. They had this amazing house in Papanui, which with an unusual name, which I think was Wairamu or something. I can't pronounce it correctly, but it was full of treasures. It had a massive library. It had collections of all sorts of treasures he'd collected throughout his life, including a lot of Māori and New Zealand treasures, which he would generously give to anybody who showed an interest.
Really? Did he give Conan Doyle any?
I believe so. I think he came loaded with gifts when he left. And I recall that he wrote when he signed a book to Sir Joseph, and he dated it the sacking of Wairamu, he called it, which is the date where he basically got loaded up with gifts and left. And I believe actually he got gifted quite a few bits and pieces, including something from the local mayor, who was a great fan of Conan Doyle as a writer of Sherlock Holmes. didn't give a toss about his religious views. In fact, probably thought he was a crank, but was determined he was going to meet and shake the hand of the man that wrote the Sherlock Holmes series, and gifted him, I think it was a moa bone. But because Conan Doyle had always said to his wife, you know, we've got to pack light, dear, you know, don't take all that stuff, must pack light, he had to sort of secrete these things away so his wife didn't see them, because otherwise she'd say, well, look at you, you're bringing all this stuff on board, you know, and you won't let me bring my things.
Wouldn't get away with pillaging the nation like that these days.
Oh, gosh, no.
Neither of them. So what were the reviews of his lectures like? Were they good? Did he go down well?
It depends who you spoke to, I think, at the time. I believe they were, really popular. There were always those people who believe in that sort of thing and are excited by it and want to hear from a man like Conan Doyle. But, you know, there were equally plenty of people who thought the guy was just a kook and these ideas were just crazy and just a fad. So he, as I said in the press, he got completely ripped to shreds. Anything they could find to poke holes in any argument, no matter how flimsy, they would just go for him. So, yeah, there was quite a bit of backwards and forwards unpleasantness through the local newspaper.
Which you would have seen in papers past, no doubt. You must have been excited when you found all that. Quite incredible. And probably the audience, too, would have wanted to come and see him as the literary person that he was. And, you know, perhaps he was going to talk about Sherlock Holmes and then got the spiritualist discussion or lecture when they were there. Although by that point, I think spiritualism, it's pretty fair to say it was pretty well established, particularly in England.
Yes, it was a pretty, you know, it was a big thing. So I think there would have been plenty in the audience who would have hung on every word that he said because, you know, he had established himself as an authority on the topic.
And as we tend to ask people who come to this country, what did he think of it? What were his impressions of New Zealand?
Well, it's interesting because I alluded to how the press were completely bagging him and they said, you know, he should spend far more time looking at the countryside than he should talking about spiritualism and all that kind of carry on. But actually, he loved New Zealand and he spoke very eloquently about it. He talked about it being God's own country. He likened it to the agricultural plains of England and the lakes and the hills of Scotland and the glaciers of Switzerland and the fjords of Norway, and you know, the people were hearty and the weather was better than Australia or Canada, and we didn't have racial problems apparently. So he spoke very eloquently about New Zealand and loved it.
Well, that's good to hear. There's so much more to know about this man, and it's on your site, Lost Christchurch. Wendy, thank you very much for just giving us a little background to Arthur Conan Doyle and his visitation to these isles. And as I said, this week marks the anniversary of the first publication of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And even though he killed him off, he did well for him, didn't he, Sherlock?
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah.
And we still love it, don't we?
Very good, Wendy. Lovely to talk to you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
That's Wendy Riley from Lost Christchurch.